Mr. Mundy?
Yes, sir.
I think we're cursed. I think we must be cursed.
Cursed? Why would you say
Well, because we have people that come to our events, either that or they must just really stink. And well, we kind of did grow from year one to year two, so I can't really say that it was that bad.
It's about getting the communication out there. I mean, obviously they have a different network they're working through.
Yeah, well, I'm going to put somebody in charge of Crusader Congress and Committee of Correspondence communication. Who wants to volunteer to do it? I am kingdude@protonmail.com. I'll be waiting to hear from all of you. Or at least one of you.
Well, it'll be interesting to see what he's coming out of it. Because, I mean, I don't want to dispute the man. But again, I throw that in there. Well, no, it's all about just making everybody homestead. Well, Mike, part of this, you know, there's so much education that has to go on there with the people. Certainly re-education of the public to buy the stuff. But he said, well, yeah, I know, I'm just like, you're going to homestead. Well, then where are you going to eat your chickens? Oh, you're going to buy them from the industrial complex? You know what I'm saying? As I said, there's a whole, leveraging this up the way we want it to go was a lot more involved than I, you know. And again, too much complication to everybody, you're going to scare them off. But I'm just saying to you that that's kind of, you got to think of it in broader terms than that. I'm going to probably go 3 hours out tomorrow one way just to get feeder pigs because I can't find them at a reasonable price. But I know, what do I do? Do I start raising them myself like I used to? I'm bred them for 30
years. I was going to say, is that something that you can do? Can you breed those pigs?
Well, I can, you know, but this is where you got to kind of ratchet that. You say, because, okay, so I get a bunch, you know, I get a couple of sows and I'm just, you know, farrowing 10 to 15 pigs a year. Well, I only want 5 or 6 and people I want to raise them for my family. Then, you know, I can sell them to other people. But again, this is where that marketing part comes in. Even if it's amongst ourselves and it's barter and everything else, there's a little bit more to it than just everybody go get a homestead and get a few chickens and plant some tomatoes.
This portion of the program is brought to you by the Crusader Congress that I just mentioned. For all of you that missed it, look, the people that were there were telling us this is the best ever. The intellectual firepower that you need to discuss the nuts and bolts of what Michael Thomas was talking about was all last weekend. Sorry that we missed you or that you missed us, but the audio recordings are now on sale. Go to crusadechannel.com/Congress. crusadechannel.com/Congress. My main tech support guy, my number one go-to, Scott Resnick, fixed the issue that might have been plaguing some of you with the link, the redirect link. It's been fixed. It works like a charm now. Go and you can go download your heart's content. It has bonus material in it. There is a QR code to download for you if you're not a Founders Pass member to get 7 days free of the Crusade Channel and sample it. There is the program, the full program in PDF form from the event. There is a link to get your for Altar Culture Trade Beautiful T-shirt. That's all in the same email and the 10 downloads. 8 hours, 45 minutes, 38 seconds worth of audio material. It's a lot to listen to, and it'll be yours. So go download today, crusadechannel.com/Congress. Mr. Mundy, I want to spend the remaining part of our Free Farm Friday talking about this story that you sent me the other day from Understanding AG or Understanding Ag by Jason Wisniewski. Corn isn't food.
Oh, Mitter Koch sent that.
Brian Koch sent this along, and he can't be with us because he's out there handling, he's with a bunch of Protestant heretics handling snakes again today, whatever it is that he's doing. 9 unpopular facts USDA and Big Ag don't want you to know. So he starts off with saying he gave a seminar, and then my most recent talk was much broader. For the past 15 years, I've been unraveling a web of deception cast on farmers and rural communities by the United States Department of Agriculture and their bosses in the industrial ag lobby. Through my experiences on the farm, work in the industry, and my reviews of the work from the likes of the Savory Institute, Understanding Ag and the Soil Health Academy, that sounds like a highfalutin. It's Soil Health Academy. I've learned the truth of the organic matter. Farmers and consumers have been duped. Our farms should be much more profitable, consumers should be much healthier, and our water much clearer. We degrade our soils to produce vast corn and soybean monocultures. This process enables a vast tax money laundering scheme industrial ag corporations use to prey upon farmers and rural communities. As a result, two-thirds of the world's land is actively, Dan, he says desertifying or desertifying. And with current practices, we could lose our remaining topsoil in as little as another 60 years. This is what I talked to Michael Thomas about. We did a Free Farm Friday show about this. It was the inaugural Free Farm Friday. The first, the origin of Free Farm Friday show, if you're a Marvel Comics guy, was talking about the University of Massachusetts at Amherst and that satellite survey that they had done showing what monoculture had done to topsoil, which has destroyed it. It's absolutely destroyed it. And then he talks about the six soil principles, which are pretty much Brian Kay's. But here are the nine things, Mitter Mundy. He says he got 900 comments on his talk. Okay. Unpopular facts. One, plant growth is a biological process, not a chemical one. Now, that's an interesting distinction, Dan Mitter Mundy, old farmer, that most people are not going to make. And he says, we now know the NPK theory of the 1850s is wholly inadequate for people who want to grow living things. Sure, chemistry matters in the biochemical reaction of cells, but the agricultural industry has dismissed the vast importance of biology in favor of chemistry and geology for hundreds of years. He's right, isn't he?
We think we can redesign nature in our own image, and let's face it, this was Bush it's amazing what the wars have done. This is Bush because of all the materials and capacity left over from the Second World War, so they had to find something more to do with it. So
that's right.
Yes, it's been we were doing it for decades before that, but it took off when there was an economic engine behind it and an industrial complex to push it. But you know, I mean, we've all been trained, Mike. You know, you want a great lawn, you go to Home Depot, you buy Scotts, not resin, Scotts, and you dump it on your lawn. That's what you do. I mean, we've been taught this, and that's what I was trying to get, a little earlier. But, it's the re-education of people, and, it's going to make your life a little bit more difficult if you want to approach it with that mindset than what we have now,
This is interesting because...
That's one of the scariest ones there. I mean, we're going to go through them, but I think the scariest one... The next scariest one is the last one, but we've got to go through.
No, one in nine are the scariest. But, Joe and Katie Beeman were here to spend 2 days with us after the Congress, and when I was showing Mrs. Beeman the church farm out there, we've got corn. Apparently, I planted miniature corn. Apparently, baby corns actually grow on corn stalks with husks because I'm growing a yard full of them. Potatoes, our herb garden is flourishing. Our mater garden is flourishing. Our cucumber garden is flourishing. But Joe was noticing, he goes like, Mike, you're doing something here that you probably don't realize and most people won't do. You don't care about having a beautiful lawn. You've taken that lawn and turned it into a place.
It's like the clampets.
You've taken that lawn and turned it into a place that produces food for the family. And that's not something that many people, they want that trophy lawn. They don't want to grow any food. They want to go grass that you can't eat.
Well, that's right. And you think about it, there are some people who take great pride in doing that themselves and making their trophy lawn. There's the other people who want the trophy lawn, and they, I say this nicely, pay a bunch of the... potential illegals to go and do it for them so they can stand out there and point it at their beautiful lawn. But if we could get those people who want to do it themselves and redirect them to something that's a little more viable, that's what I tell you, Mike, watch The Good Life, where they plow up their yards in the middle of London and people and make the neighbors mad. But that's part of the idea, too, of us gathering together in groups and creating a gated community or some regional area where we're of the mindset that we're not only not worried about the lawn, but we're also not insulted that you have a chicken walking around on our front lawn.
Okay, principle number two: governments cause starvation, not a lack of food. That's an interesting. Did it not? Hold on. Governments cause starvation, not a lack of food?
Well, because they're going to determine where the supply needs to be, and it's not always based on the benefit of people.
Well, they say today, and this is true, today starvation is the product of bad government policy, not a limitation on Earth's ability to produce food. Well, of course. Of course, they gain control of the land, and then they pay people to do things to it that are not for its health. And then they say, well, all these people don't have this, they don't have that. Well, because you destroyed the land. Globally, we produce enough food to feed 14 billion people, and we are terribly inefficient at it. Number three.
It's not only just destroying the land. What else do we do with it? We take corn and we make ethanol.
That's right.
Everybody likes what they like, wants what they want. And, I'm certainly not one to want to limit my selection of food. But I say, do we need 17 different flavors of potato chips? I mean, really, that's driving human happiness. And if you saw the amount of food I pick up at the food bank every week to feed the animals, it goes through that route. Eventually, it's going in the dumpster or it's going to me. You would be appalled at what we throw out. But anyway, one little food bank in the middle of a little town that I go pick up.
This is so simple, and yet most people are going to go, that's so difficult. How are you? No, it's not. It's easy to understand. Corn, and then they say this. Watch Michael Matheson. Is it Michael Matheson Miller, I think? The guy who made the movie Poverty Inc. Dan, I know. Have you seen it?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Got it. I got a copy of it.
Okay. You need to watch Poverty Inc. if you want to know what he's talking about and how it works. There really is a skit. It is horrific. And several. Michael Matheson or just Michael Matheson Miller? Okay, Michael Matheson Miller made the movie Poverty Inc. Well, watch it, folks. A whole new world. This is going to be a Disney movie. A whole new world is going to open up in front of your eyes. You're going to go like, I never heard that. Then in that movie, he goes and interviews Okinawa Konichibu, however you pronounce her name, the Nigerian pro-life activist, and she says, "Oh man, this is Nigeria. We have all the. This is the most healthy. This is the most healthy, fertile land in the world. We don't need Bono to come here. We need Bono to stop coming here. Stop coming to." She says, "Stop, Bono. Stop coming to Nigeria. What we need you to do is leave and take all of your subsidy, Obianama Ekiocha, and take all of your subsidies and all your government programs with you. Well, you know what we need? We need land ownership," is what she said. Anyway, number three, corn and soy are industrial products, not food. Earlier, we broke down the corn supply. You'll find soybean oil in almost every highly processed food-like substance. You'll also find it in biodiesel, plastics, and road treatments. Does anyone think it odd that soy is spared to make plastic Happy Meal toys when the world is on the edge of starvation? Most people don't know that, Mitter Mundy.
There you go, Mitter Beeman. He wanted that mentioned. He texted me. You mentioned about the corn is not a real food.
It's not.
I'll tell you, a number of years ago, when Rutgers Angry, we were having a round table I was invited to, who I was part of the 4-H delegation in our county. And one of the things I'm sitting there, that there was this big grant that was being given so that the farmers could start growing more sorghum in the county of Hunterdon, so that it could be used as a dust suppressant in various, wherever you need to suppress dust on fields, on new construction, on sports fields and things like that. And it's like, we're growing sorghum so we can make sticky stuff to spray on the ground to keep the dust down. And the question is, with a very few exceptions, why are we making so much bare land that when you have to need to do the dust, and why are we growing sorghum to do it? But I thought it was silly at the time when I told them that.
That's a good question. Why are you? Number four. Plants can gather 97.5% of their matter from the atmosphere alone. In 1634, Jean-Baptiste Van Helmont was arrested for studying plants. He filled a pot with soil, weighed it, and planted a willow tree. The experiment ran for 5 years, with Helmont adding only water to the pot. At the end of the experiment, he removed the willow tree, dried and weighed the soil, which revealed that 97.5% of the weight remained. Recent research by Dr. Christine Jones on the liquid carbon pathway reveals more of what we know about this process today. So, in other words, there's stuff floating around in the air that will be sufficient to feed most plant life. And if you ever come to my house and looked out back of my fence and wondered how there are 60-foot tall bamboos growing there with 120-foot tall kudzu crawling 120 feet up a pine tree that I didn't plant, I sure as hell didn't fertilize, and I certainly didn't water it, well, there you go.
Well, the biggest example of that is the major rainforests, like the one in Amazon. You know, they burn the sections down, they try to plant on it, and found the soil itself is not really very fertile. But, you know, when the ecosystem is created, it seems to flourish pretty well when we don't go mess it up.
And the other part about that is read One Straw Revolution. You know, by that Japanese farmer, and I don't have it here in front of me, but I do own the book and I did read it. You know, he says that when he trained himself and when he finally got over his urge and the temptation to prune his mandarin orange trees, his grove took off. When he was pruning it and trying to force it into being cute, you know, and thinking that, you know, he was dressing it up and that it needed him dressing it. When he finally gave up on that, his mandarin grove flourished. And he would have a bumper crop of mandarins every year.
But like I said, with the animals at our talk, that applies to the plants too. This is, I'm sure, I didn't know that it was this high, with 97.5% as done in this experiment. But we have now created and mutilated the animals and the plants. This may no longer be true, which is why we have to go back to some of the more historic or the more heritage type breeds and or seeds, because I don't know if the new ones can do this anymore. Yeah. I have my doubts.
And then he says, okay, number five, plants rely on microbes to access nutrients. Plants don't simply absorb NPK through their roots as we were taught in second grade. We are just beginning to understand some of the complex ways plants are fed by microbiology through processes like rhizophagy, however you pronounce that. This is true. Now, with the advent of the microscope, you know, if you read Ashley's father, John, gave me a series of book about the nutrients that are already in the soil. And in the first chapter, the guy did an electron microscope photograph times 40,000. They took a piece of, they took at the root of a plant and magnified it times 40,000. And what was seen on what you think are little tiny hairs that come off that come off a root was absolutely incredible. I want to say that they were called mennitoads or pennantoads or something like that. Little worm-like critters that you could put 1 trillion of them on the tip of a ballpoint pen. But he goes, like, without these little guys here, this plant dies. And he explained, you know, what the little dude is doing here. There is nothing that the Miracle-Gro Corporation can do to help you grow these little pentatodes or whatever the hell they're called. But it is simply incredible to see these things. And then to see the process explained, it's almost as though there was a creator. It's almost like this principle of life is always working, and it doesn't need us. Let's move on, because this is one that Brian Kay should be here to help us cover. Me and Mitter Monday will do our best here on a Free Farm Friday. Mike Churchill. This portion of the program brought to you by the Founders Trading Post. I hope you're going to stop by this weekend and snap up one of those handmade Sacred Heart, St. Joseph Heart, Immaculate Heart tie clips. We have them in silver and gold, but we only have 18 of them. We also have handmade wooden coffee scoops now. This is just expands our line of artisan-made stuff in the Founders Trading Post. Yes, we have the coffees. Yes, we have the cigars. Yes, we are and want to be your bookstore. Yes, we have the handmade rosaries and all that stuff. But you can get it all Get it all at shop.mikechurch.com, shop.mikechurch.com. I will even move the Congress talks. I'll sell them in two different places, maybe even three, into the store so you can put it all in one shopping cart this weekend as well. Shop.mikechurch.com. Here you go. Weeds can be controlled with cover crops, not tillage or chemicals. This is what I was talking to Michael Thomas about, Dan, when I mentioned that. If you do your cover crops right, and if you keep all that refuse around from, if you do cut your grass, save the clippings. If you got oak trees or whatever kind of trees that shed leaves, do not throw them away or burn them. Save them. You save all of the, you conserve everything, all the life that's on your property, and then you use it in what's called cover cropping and in ground coverage. He says some living covering cover crops, like cereal rye, exude allelopathic compounds that suppress weeds. Cover from residue and cover crop canopies eliminates the sunlight fledgling forbs rely on. Tillage stirs the latent seed bank and herbicide kills biology while creating resistant varieties. This is all about Free Farm Friday, boilerplate stuff we have been talking about. We're in our third year now, Mitter Muddy. And as I said, if Brian was here, he'd go over his five principles on soil health. And one of them is to keep the ground covered where possible.
Definitely. I mean, take it even further, Mike. Just about anything that you think you're going to throw out in your kitchen should be compost or fed to the dog.
If you have a dog. Number seven, soil type does not matter. Biology can build over it. Now, this is one that many people go, you saying that you can build that, you can. Yeah, you can actually turn clay into productive soil. It takes time, but it will work. And then he says, Alan Savory and Alejandro Carrillo are building topsoil in deserts. Wherever plants can grow, topsoil can be formed. Consider how grass overtakes sidewalks, right? And old fence lines.
Look at how fast, if you don't take care of your pristine yard and for a couple of weeks, things start to overtake without even trying. And you're not even growing it right. You're artificial fertilizer.
That's right.
But life has a way.
Yep. Number eight, today's crops have a fraction of the nutrition as 20 to 50 years ago. The protein content and test weights of commodity grain continue to fall. Farms produce fewer nutrients per acre than ever before. To get the vitamins a single orange offered 60 years ago, 8 oranges would need to be eaten today. Now, why is this? And this is because of the monoculture and the tillage. Because the animals have not been introduced and the cover crops back to the land where the farming occurred, which is the natural process of restoring nitrogen and nutrients to the soil, which is why you don't want to be out there this spring with your tiller. You need to learn about, and there are some instances where you're going to till, okay? That's not an iron rule. But he's right about the amount of nutrients that aren't in the stuff, which is why so many people have health problems. And why so many people, look, we are not sailors on 8-week voyages across the Atlantic Ocean trying to avoid getting scurvy and need oranges as vitamin C supplements. There should be ample magnesium, ample zinc, ample vitamin D, ample all these things in the food that you eat, Mitter Mundy.
Oh, well, there's something to be said. I said, the old folks said the food doesn't taste the way it used to.
It doesn't!
It doesn't. That, I think, I don't know how many months ago where we've done these. I know I sent an article that the Department of Agriculture is now giving out grants. So, we got the food supply pretty good as far as what we can make and how we can transport it. Now we can actually see if we can reintroduce nutrition to it. I actually said that. I said
we can reintroduce nutrition to it. Well, it looks like a broccoli.
Giving out grants to try and get the universities. Okay, now we got to actually make it edible or worth eating.
Here, I'll give you a little anecdote. So, I grew my broccoli plants from seeds this year, and I learned something because I didn't think I could put the broccoli in the ground as soon as I did. I was waiting for the frost to fade. But Katie told me, she goes, I think that broccoli is pretty frost hardy. So I got too late in the ground with my broccoli. Now, I'm going to get some broccoli this year. I got none last year. But this year, we've already gotten two bowls. It's not a lot, but again, this is a learning process. I can do it again this fall, right? So I can plan for broccoli harvest in November and December, late November, early December, and we should have a lot. But I want to tell you, between me and Maggie, we went out and picked a decent-sized bowl filled with broccoli flowers and broccoli broccolinis, you know, because they start, you know, they grow out, they don't stay in a bowl. And we just blanched them last night. I slapped a little butter on them, and I'm going like, okay, where is my store-bought? What have you done with my store-bought broccoli? Where's the broccoli? There's no broccoli in this. Mitter Mundy, that broccoli was so good. It was, I was eating it, and I devoured it, because it must, that, so now I know what broccoli is actually supposed to taste like.
And your body is reacting to that. You are enjoying it and absorbing it and craving it because it has something your body needs, and it actually has it there. It's there.
I'm not exaggerating. It was divine almost. I'm thinking, I wonder if I can just hack the whole remainder of the plant down after flowers, cut it into little pieces, and make broccoli soup out of it.
Never tried that, but that's an idea.
Well, there was a guy on YouTube, and that's what he did, and what she did. She goes, I'm going to eat this whole plant, even the leaves, she said. So, yes, there is a difference. Number nine, and this will be our final one. 70% on this, this is one, number one is scary. And number one, just to recap, is plant growth is a biological process, not a chemical one. And number nine is even more scary. 70% of farm revenues derived directly or indirectly from government subsidies. In other words, the government of the United States and governments across the free world are paying farmers to either not grow or grow the monoculture, unnutritional crap that passes for food. And then, you know, he says, Julian says, it is downright scary to consider how reliant our farming communities have become on government programs. Crop insurance is one of the most direct subsidies, and trillions of taxpayer dollars pour into downstream markets like ethanol plants. All of this government funding artificially props up commodity and land values. So, in our Catholic and Christian land movement, we should all resolve, dude, you got to go out of your way if you can find it. Maybe you don't have it near you, but if you do, be willing to do something like pay the extra dollar or 80 cents a gallon and don't get the ethanol, get the gas that's ethanol free. So the only way you're going to get rid of this, if we can't escape from underneath these governments, is to make it so it's not worth their time even to subsidize it and to make it anymore. But you got to strike blows against this. You got to go to the farmer's market. You got to grow everything that you can grow. Again, baby steps. But 70% of farm revenues come from subsidy. That's terrifying.
No, it did, and that number staggered me, because in doing my study of some places, I was doing a lot of study about Tennessee and different counties, and I was getting a lot of data and different things. And one was the different kind of commodities, different kind of agriculture, different kind of and income breakdowns per county. A lot of them were anywhere from 10 to 30% of the income of the farm. They were listing it was from government subsidies. That was, I don't know how they're calculated. That was just direct money, I'm assuming. The 70% is, you know, going into other programs and other ways that's being subsidized. But just off the cuff, people who were theoretically trying to make a living at it, 20 to 30% of the income was actually being subsidized. Which makes you, got people got to understand, well, you know, it's hard to say now, you know, food is cheap. Well, food is still relatively cheap, but it's really not cheap, if you understand how the money is being filtered to get it where it is. So maybe it is worth paying $10 a gallon for milk.
Right.
If you know, instead of 5 or 6 or whatever it is now, I don't know. I don't buy it in the store. But it really is as expensive as you might think it is. But
well,
those are hard things to get across to people. I don't.
it is hard to get across to people. And again, you know, our footprint is pretty small here, but it has influenced a lot of people. You know, the fact that so many people are contacting Michael Jadis or Michael Thomas about the Catholic land movement, that's encouraging to me. It's also an indication of I guess our marketing department needs a bit of a goose here. But there would be a lot more people that would be interested in this. There are a lot of people that we obviously have not contacted. They don't know about us, and we don't know about them. And we'd be very interested in these Free Farm Friday discussions, and maybe even would participate in them. But I think that Michael was saying the same thing that me, you, and Brian have been saying, and many people have been saying the last 3 years, or as we go into year three of Free Farm Friday. This, and we talked about this at the conference, at the Congress. Folks, this is about doing. It's not about whining, carping, and complaining, and identifying the problem. We all know where the problems are. It's about doing and actually doing the hard work that is necessary to actually bring in about that change. If you really want it, then you're going to have to do it.
And we can't do it alone. You know, we do have to partner together to do this and make the contact. I didn't want to, but I'm going to get up at 6 tomorrow or get in the truck at 6 tomorrow and ride almost 3 hours out to the center of Pennsylvania to get pigs. Because to get what I want at the price I want, I can get some closer. I can't, you know, like, it doesn't make sense for me to buy a feeder pig for $150. I haven't even done anything that doesn't include the transportation price. And you think about that. I mean, that's the kind of price that I got to put into the animal before I even start, which makes me wonder if I should start breeding again. But I can go out there, you know, and pay for the fuel and all, but I got some other people who I'm partnering with. Well, can you get me some? So now it makes it kind of worthwhile to go out there and get 20 of them, you know, to ride out.
Well, there you go. Now you're a co-op.
150 miles to go, you know, to go get them for $65. And they're breeding what I want. And they have been, they've been given a couple of shots, but they have been given no antibiotics and no special feeds. I said, boy, I want to go. I'm going to go. He says, 218 pigs. I said, okay, I want some.
All right, that's going to wrap up this edition of Free Farm Friday. And it was a double header here today. So Michael Thomas in part one, and then why corn and soybean are not foods is part two. And that'll wrap it up. Mr. Monday, I got a roll. Thank you very much. Thanks for coming
to
the Congress and for all you and your wonderful son did, for all you and Alex did. It was great to always to see you and to hang out with you guys. And God bless you. And safe travels on your trip tomorrow, brother. Brista?
Yeah, thank you very much. God bless everybody. And I'll send out some, you know, I don't do it often, but I'll send some piggy pictures out when I get them.
We'll look forward to the piggy pics.
Okay.
All right.
Have a good weekend.
You do.